Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.
You're listening to the FT Money Show from Investors Chronicle and FT Money.
Hello and welcome to the FT Money Show. In today's programme, would you credit it? As yet more mortgage lenders withdraw their products and close their doors to new borrowers, we ask what it's doing to the housing market. Sell pork bellies, buy corn, do something else with soybeans. Is now really the right time for private investors to enter the commodities market? The Star of India. Can New Star's partnership with India's Tata Group deliver sparkling performance, with the Mumbai market down 30% in just 3 months? And we have some good news and bad news for last-minute tax-efficient investors. I'm Matthew Vincent from FT Money, and I'll be giving you the lowdown on all of these money matters in downloadable form with the help of my colleague from Investors Chronicle, John McLeod.
Hello.
So let's start with the money news. Now, here's a quiz question for you. What has fallen by 8% in a week and by 40% in a month? No, it's not the Indian stock market or the price of soybeans. More on both of those later in the programme. It's actually the number of mortgage products available to home buyers in the UK. At the beginning of March, there were 7,726 different mortgage products available to home buyers, according to the financial information provider moneyfacts.co.uk. Now, there are fewer than 4,800. And it seems that this dearth of deals is further slowing activity in the housing market. According to this week's Bank of England data, the number of mortgages approved for house purchase in February was nearly 40% lower than at the same time last year. So to assess the impact on house prices, we're joined by FT Money's property expert, Charlene Goff. Charlene, you've been speaking this week to a number of estate agents to sort of take the temperature of the housing market and find out if there is a knock-on effect on prices. What have they been saying to you?
Well, really, I think we are starting to see a knock-on effect on prices, and the property prices that are being affected most severely are those that rely on mortgage finance, as that's becoming much harder to get. The buyers of the sort of mainstream mass-market properties are having to get cheaper deals if they want to buy. So estate agents are seeing, really, asking prices aren't being met in many occasions, and we're seeing discounts of 5, 10, even 15% on some properties now.
So the discounts that the people are trying to get when buying, far greater than the reported falls in house prices that we're getting from the house price indices.
Yeah, that's right. The anecdotal data coming through. And they say really this has been the last few weeks they're seeing sort of bigger discounts being negotiated. And what's quite interesting as well is that estate agents are saying there's a bit of a standoff between buyers and sellers. So the sellers are still thinking that they can get last year's peak prices and going in with quite optimistic asking prices. And buyers paying much more attention to the negative press and so on, and are really not willing to pay those prices, and are offering prices which are much lower, often quite cheeky, some estate agents are saying. So it all depends on whether the vendor has to sell. And if they do, they probably will have to cut their price a bit. If they don't, they might bring their property off the market and put it on again in 6 months' time when it's all calmed down.
So it sounds like there's a sort of complete disconnection between what sellers think they can get and what buyers think they can get away with.
Yeah, definitely.
And I suppose another factor, I mean, I've heard anecdotally that the number of sellers
this time of the year is roughly the same as it was this time last year, but it's the number of buyers that's just been more than decimated.
Fallen off. I mean, I think everyone's just feeling they'll wait and see what happens. You know, everything seems a bit chaotic at the moment. You can't get a mortgage. You don't quite know where house prices are going. Interest rates may be coming down again. I think unless people really have to buy now, a lot of people are thinking, ride it out until the summer and see what happens and maybe take another look in 3 or 6 months' time.
I think everyone seems to be waiting for liquidity to return to the money markets so that the banks and building societies can offer more attractive rates, and that's going to be the crucial factor. But John, I think you have a view that there are some good deals out there, and it's not necessarily the rates that are determining whether or not people can get the mortgages. It's the willingness of the lender to deal with the applications.
That's right. I mean, First Direct have withdrawn the mortgages to not to First Direct customers, but simply because they're overwhelmed because they're one of the ones offering a good deal. I mean, if you think that mortgage applications have fallen off by 40% year on year, I think a lot of the products that have been taken off the market, it's more of an admin issue. And meanwhile, lenders have cut the staff and not taken on staff, so they're now finding staffing problems. So that's a more optimistic view of things. On the other hand, you've got a problem in that from Monday, capital gains tax is going to down to a flat rate of 18%, whereas investors used to have to hold on for up to 10 years to get the 24% capital gains tax rate after taper relief when selling the properties. So buy-to-let investors might think, if I'm not going to see capital appreciation, there's no point holding it on, I might start selling it. So if you do have a wave of houses hitting the market, that could push prices further down.
Although it might start to get the market moving again.
If the first-time buyers feel confident about coming into the market, but they might want to wait and hold off and see if there are falls.
But it sounds like everything will depend on whether people can get the mortgage finance they need quickly enough and at attractive rates.
And if you feel confident about going to the market. I mean, I think the one difference between the UK and the US is that we don't have such an oversupply of properties that they do there, so the demand might hold up here.
And Charlene, just finally, what's your view? Do you think that we'll start to see more attractive mortgage deals in 3 months, 6 months?
It's really hard to say at the moment whether we've passed the worst or there's still more bad news to come. I mean, at the end of the day, lenders have to lend, and I'm sure some will try and come back into the market because it must be really hurting their profit margins. But at the moment, it seems that the only way they're moving is upwards, and lenders are pulling back on a daily basis. So it doesn't seem to be much light at the end of the tunnel quite yet.
Not quite yet. We'll see later in the year.
Yes.
Thanks, Charlene. And you can find Charlene's analysis of the UK housing market and her asking price map of Britain in this week's FT Money in the Weekend FT, out on the 5th and 6th of April, and online at ft.com/money. You can also send in your questions by emailing us at ask.ftyourmoney@ft.com. Still to come in the programme, will New Star's new emerging market fund shine brightly in India? And we have some good news and bad news on the deadline for making tax-efficient investments. But first, agricultural commodities. With diets changing in emerging economies and vehicles changing from petrol to ethanol-based fuels, demand for commodities such as corn, wheat and pork bellies was high in 2007. But this year, the prices of some agricultural commodities have been falling. Soybean and wheat prices have been down in recent weeks as traders have chewed over the implications of the shifts in agricultural production likely across the US farming industry this year. So is this the time to invest in a new agricultural commodities fund? And indeed, is this the time to launch one of these funds? John, you've been answering and addressing some of these questions this week.
It seems ironic that just at the point where prices have become more volatile, a lot of these new funds started to come out. There are four of them launching in the next few weeks. So I spoke to Henry Boucher, who's the manager of the Saracen Agrizar Fund, and I began by asking about the long-term trend that's driving prices.
The combination of factors have been around for some time. In particular, population growth is something that people have always worried about, right back from the great English economist Malthus, who argued that ultimately the population would be too big for the supply of food. And in the last 12 years alone, we've seen a further billion people added to the world population. and the United Nations expects another billion in the next 12 years. So that's a big factor. But we also have increasing standards of living in the emerging world, which are adding significantly to levels of demand. So people are enjoying higher protein diets, for instance. And if you add that to the policies that are being introduced to combat climate change, in particular the introduction of biofuels, and combine that with the high oil prices, then you've got a very strong new level of long-term level of demand in the agricultural space.
So prices have really taken off in the last couple of years. I mean, do you think that these recent rises are sustainable?
Well, the short-term causes, I think, perhaps are not totally sustainable. I mean, some of them relate to weather factors, which is always a big issue in agriculture. So we've had an unprecedented drought in Australia, probably the worst in 100 years. We've got very low stockpiles of food. High energy prices are feeding through the biofuels market. And recently, we've seen a very significant increase in the amount of speculative money coming into agricultural commodity markets. So I don't think many of those factors are necessarily sustainable. I think it's the long-term drivers that will still be there in the background, though.
So are there some areas that you think there could be problems in current prices?
Yes, I think if you look at, say, wheat, I mean, people have to remember what you're buying when you invest in the commodities market is really this year's crop. So we'll have to see how things turn out over the summer. And there was recently this important US plantings report, which showed us that farmers, in fact, have been planting quite a lot more soy and a bit less corn than was expected. So the maize price is actually likely to remain fairly strong. I think the one where we may see further falls is the wheat price, where there is evidence that a lot of people have been planting more wheat in response to the higher price, and we could end up with quite a bumper crop this year. But I think one of the dangers with agricultural commodities is the weather is always there, and it's always very difficult to speculate about short-term trends.
Are there some ways of playing counter cyclical trends?
Yes, I mean, this is something we're doing in our agriculture fund. In particular, if you look at some of the people who've suffered as a result of these high basic commodity prices, and take the pig farmers or the poultry farmers, for instance, who suffer when grain prices rise, when grain prices start to fall back, they could well be beneficiaries. If you go back to the long-term trends, you've got a number of major underlying price increases potentially in things like fertilizer, where there's very limited supply. So if you're trying to produce more food, you can see tremendous asset plays in some of the, for instance, potash miners who basically control something which is becoming increasingly scarce.
That was Henry Boucher talking to John a little bit earlier. John, Henry's fund is one of four that you mentioned that's going to be launching in the next few weeks and months. Do you think fund investment is the way to go over the longer term to get over this sort of period of volatility?
There are different ways to play it. If you invest in funds, most of them now are investing in the companies themselves. So that picks up Henry's point about the fact that it's more about the company's prospects than those of individual commodities. The best known fund in the sector is Schroder Agriculture, which has actually had to close now to investors because it's raised over £5 billion. And the managers feel they can't cope with the capacity. You can actually still access it, the same strategy, through a more diversified Schroder Offshore Commodities Fund. Or you can invest in some of these other agriculture commodity funds, which invest indirectly in companies. But there are also alternative ways to take exposure to the commodity prices themselves.
So if you had a strong view on an individual commodity, and I think Henry was saying that he was a little bit bearish on wheat. So let's just say that I shared his view. I don't know anything about commodities, but if I were bearish on wheat, could I short wheat? And if so, how would I do it?
Again, there are different ways to do that. You can use more risky derivative plays, or you can use probably the most sensible way to do it is using exchange-traded commodities, which are like exchange-traded funds that are listed on the London Stock Exchange. You can use those to go long on commodity prices, but you can also go short. So if the price falls, you profit on a one-for-one basis. And you can do that on both individual commodities and baskets of agricultural commodities.
And rather than having to short an exchange-traded commodity, is it right that I buy
you buy a short
ETC, as they're known, and I can do that through my stockbroker?
You can do it through your stockbroker, and you could do, for example, you could do pairs trades where you think one is going to rise. You could buy a leverage ETC, so you get two times the price rise, or you can buy a short ETC where you get one times the price fall as profit.
Well, it's just like that film Trading Places, isn't it? I'm almost tempted to go out and jump into the pit right now. John, thank you very much indeed for that, and for more on agricultural commodities funds, look out for John's feature in Investors Chronicle, which is on sale from the 11th of April. Coming up, we have good news and bad news on tax-efficient individual savings accounts. Before that, though, a new fund investing in India. Fund manager Newstar has announced that it's formed a partnership with the Tata Group, one of India's largest business conglomerates, to launch an Indian equity fund in the second quarter of 2008. It's the latest emerging market fund from the UK group following the launch of its Heart of Africa fund in November 2007. And the prospects look good, with the Indian economy posting strong growth in excess of 8% in each of the last 3 years. But with the Indian stock market down 30% in just 3 months, what are the prospects for investors in the future? Well, to find out, Ellen Kelleher of FT Money spoke to Newstar Chairman John Duffield and Farooq Kavarana, Chairman of Tata Asset Management Limited.
John, would you explain why you decided to launch a fund, a Newstar fund, in India?
Yes, the fundamental reason is that we believe that India is one of the most attractive countries in the world to invest in, growing, as you know, at 8% per annum, which is, by European standards, of course, huge rate of growth. And we believe that this is a fund for retail investors, and we believe that the retail investors in the United Kingdom really ought to be participating in that extraordinary rate of growth.
And Farooq, why did you agree to this deal?
Well, we are an asset management company, and we all are always looking to increase our assets under management. And we felt that the UK retail investor had not yet been well served by anybody else. And we decided that, or rather both Newstar and we thought we'd be an excellent combination to tap the retail market in the United Kingdom for investment in India.
And Farooq, there has been a correction in the Indian market recently, and the shares have come off quite significantly. How do you think now is the time to invest, or is there value to be found in the short term?
I think there's some value to be found in the medium term, and certainly great value to be found in the long term. I can't predict how markets will react. I mean, I think this reaction may go further. It may bottom out here. So it's rather difficult to predict, make short-term predictions.
Which companies would you encourage private investors to look at?
Well, I think the whole Indian market has been, has suffered a correction. And I think there's value to be found in most sectors at this point in time. But I would certainly think the infrastructure sector, which is, materials like steel, heavy vehicles. I'm not talking Tata vehicles only. But I think power stations, companies that are in the power sector, companies that are in road construction, building bridges, things of that nature, would find greater value than just the traditional IT stocks that have been the flavor of the month for quite some time.
And John, Newstar has suffered in recent months as well with the outflows that you've seen. Why did you decide to go into the Indian market now?
The short-term timing is a bit arbitrary, because to launch a fund like this takes time. It's not something you can say the Indian market's corrected, so we'll launch a fund next week. That's just not realistic. It takes 9 to 12 months, because first of all, we have to get to know our joint venture partners, Tata, and then, of course, there's all a long, long regulatory process, which takes a long time. This is a Luxembourg fund, so it's got to be approved in Luxembourg and here, so it's 4 or 5 months just for the regulation alone. From the point of view of the fund, it's fortuitous, of course, that we've had this correction, because clearly we'd rather start the fund after a 25% fall than with hindsight at the peak.
And how closely will Newstar be involved in sort of overseeing the fund's performance?
Well, we have total confidence in Tata Asset Management, of course. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing this. And they have very great knowledge of the Indian market, obviously. And we have almost no knowledge of the Indian market. So that's why it's such a valuable idea for us, that we can use their expertise as asset managers in India. And from their point of view, of course, we have our retailing expertise in London. So that is the nature of it's Tata's asset management skills combined with our marketing skills here in London.
That was Ellen Kelleher from FT Money talking to John Duffield from Newstar and Farooq Kavarana of Tata Asset Management. And finally today, good news, bad news on last-minute ISA investments. The bad news is that the tax year ends on the 5th of April, and if you haven't taken out an ISA for 2007-2008, you'll lose the chance to invest up to £7,000 tax efficiently. But the good news is that if you're listening to this on Friday the 4th or Saturday the 5th of April, there's still time to invest. John, you've been finding out that a certain ISA providers are keeping their doors open until, I think, midnight on Saturday the 5th.
Right up to the line. I mean, some providers have shut early, some even a week before the deadline. But certainly up till Friday, you can apply with a lot of people. A lot of people still accept postal applications Saturday. And if you want to apply on the phone or the internet, you can buy funds with Fidelity's Fund Supermarket Network. That's until midnight. Or IFA Best Invest's open again until midnight. Alliance Trust is open until midnight. That's for self-selectisers with shares and funds. Hargreaves Lansdown until 11:45. Barclays till 6 p.m. And TD Waterhouse until noon. You can go and deliver by hand in London until noon with TD Waterhouse.
So you can literally take your envelope down to TD Waterhouse by midday on Saturday. Or sit in front of your computer at 11:59. Pondering which fund to invest, and then hit return, and you'll still get your ISA allowance.
And you don't even have to invest in. You can hold cash or use phase investment schemes if you're worried about investing straight, putting your money into the market straight away.
Which is a good point, given volatility in markets at present. What about investors in self-invested personal pensions or SIPs? If they want to take advantage of making a contribution in this particular tax year, can they also leave it that late?
Again, you can still apply until Saturday. It could be particularly advantageous to do it if you're a basic rate taxpayer, because you get 22% relief at the moment. From April the 6th, it'll go down to 20%. So it could be time to top up on contributions. Hargreaves Lansdown, they're open until 11:45, and Barclays will accept postal contributions on Saturday.
And that is the sort of the very last time you can get 22% basic rate tax relief on those contributions, isn't it?
There is one slight wrinkle in that, which is there might be an advantage investing in an ISA now if you're a basic rate taxpayer, and then later on, if you become a higher rate taxpayer, investing it when you get the 40% tax relief. So that could depend on your circumstances, and it's a bit of a gamble, because there are some worries that the 40% tax relief may go anyway.
Right, but you need to pretty much take your view by Saturday, the 5th of April.
Time is running out.
But why do we always leave these things to the last minute? It's just human nature, isn't it? John, thank you very much. And that's all we have time for in this week's FT Money Show. Remember that you can email your views and your questions to ask.ftyourmoney@ft.com. And we'll be back next week with another financial lowdown in downloadable form. But until then, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from John.
Goodbye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.